Welcome to the Side Hustle Project, a podcast where we explore the nitty-gritty details behind what it takes to start and grow a profitable side hustle. I'm your host, Ryan Robinson, and in this podcast, I'm bringing you interviews with entrepreneurs, best-selling authors, CEOs, investors, and people just like you who are building and profiting from interesting side hustles. In today's episode, we're talking to my good friend, Laurence Bradford, the creator of the massive blog and online community, Learn to Code With Me, where she teaches over 90,000 monthly readers how to build their skills as developers and land well-paid jobs in their fields. Laurence also runs the wildly popular podcast, which bears the same name, the Learn to Code With Me podcast, where she's released 5 seasons covering everything from learning specific coding languages to coming up with side project ideas that can land you jobs or grow into your own business one day. She's built a pretty impressive business around sponsorships of both her blog and podcast, and she also somehow finds the time to write for publications like Forbes, Mashable, and USA Today. Now, a bit of exciting news. Shortly before we recorded this episode, Laurence had recently quit her day job working at the online course hosting platform Teachable to now focus full-time on growing her blog and podcast. In this episode, Laurence and I talk about the early origins of her blog and podcast, her motivations for wanting to get into blogging, how she got started in a competitive niche, her experience landing freelance clients from her blog, and more. We dive into the content promotion strategies that she uses to rank well in organic search for extremely competitive terms like how to code, nudging out companies that spend millions of dollars in their marketing budgets each year. We cover the breakdown of her income sources, how she monetizes her blog and her podcast episodes, including her game plan on how she's accelerating those channels in the coming year. All of this and so much more. And as always, you can find everything we mention in today's episode in the show notes at ryrob.com/podcast. That's spelled ryrob.com/podcast. Let's get into today's interview with Laurence Bradford. Laurence, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Ryan.
It's awesome to reconnect with you. And actually, it's at such an exciting time for you, no less. You recently left your day job where you worked at Teachable, the online course platform. So you're now diving full force into working on your own blog, your podcast. So first of all, congratulations. But why now? What was right about the timing to make the leap full-time into your own business today?
Yeah, so it wasn't something that was easy. I think a lot of people have, or not a lot of people, but there's some people who have these epic quitting stories where they're like counting down the day to quit their job and they're like excited to like give their 2-week notice to their manager. Mine was the opposite of that. I thought a lot about the decision. It took me kind of like months to get to that point. And I knew it was something I had to do, but it was not something I was looking forward to. I really loved working at Teachable. I loved my coworkers. I loved the like actual team that I was on. So when I started working there, the company was about, I was like the 19th person there. And then when I left, it was over 80. So it grew a lot in that time. And my like... Yeah. Yeah, the team that I ended up then being on, because when I started out, we only had like, the whole team structure wasn't really there yet. Like it kind of was, but not really. But anyway, so the team I ended up being on, like absolutely loved. So it was not an easy decision to do. But yeah, I just got to the point where I was focusing on 2 different things. And it was like 80% of my time or more would be going to my full-time job, which was fine. But then outside of my full-time job, I was also working on nights and weekends on the blog, on the podcast, and on other things. And I, you know, there's a lot that went into it. It wasn't just this, but I think the biggest driving force was just feeling like I was not giving it my all to one thing. And I just wasn't really doing that great at either thing. And I was like, you know, if I could just focus on one thing and give it my all and do my best, I think I'm just going to make a lot more progress career-wise. I'm going to move ahead faster. I'm just going to feel better at myself. And I can have like a social life, you know, outside of this. And the thing I ended up choosing was the blog and the podcast and all of that.
Yes. Well, I'm pumped to dig into this with you. But I do want to rewind the clock back a little bit right now. So could you take us back to, you know, the Laurence of right out of college and sort of set the stage for everyone with, you know, when you began your journey learning to code yourself?
Yeah, for sure. I'll try to give the condensed version. In college, I was studying history and economics, I had studied abroad in China in 2011. So yeah, in 2011, I fell in love with East Asian culture, and I ended up also just like loving like the economies and things of that nature. So when I was done with college, I decided, like, I knew I wanted to get back to Asia. This time it was Thailand. So I taught in Thailand for 6 months. After I was done teaching, I ended up getting a full-time job. Like, at the time, it was my dream job, or so what I thought was my dream job, working at a Thai think tank in their economic development research department. And it took me about like three weeks to realize it was not what I thought it was going to be. It was definitely not something I could see myself doing for the rest of even like the next few months, let alone the rest of my life. And at that point it was, it was difficult to, I had put so much time into trying to, first of all, get this opportunity, because there are, like, unlike tech jobs, these kind of jobs are, there's not that many, there's not really that high of demand for them. And it's super competitive. And there are people that kind of pursue this field that are getting PhDs, and it's very like academic, and it takes a lot of time to get there. You're not really making that much money. So, and these are all things I didn't really consider back when I was, you know, in my like senior year of college. But in any event, so I was like, okay, you know, I definitely don't want to do this. What is it that I should do next? I was still in Thailand at the time. And I was no longer teaching, right? I was working at this think tank, but I had a lot of time on my hands because I was alone in Thailand working at this think tank. Yeah, I had like some friends and stuff, but I was pretty alone. So, and I lived alone, and the area I was in, there weren't a lot of people around, at least that I knew. So I had all this time. So I began doing a lot of research, and I found out about tech and tech jobs and how there was like a shortage of people with these technical skills to fill these roles, how they were, you know, high paid, how I didn't have to go back to college and get another degree or go to grad school to do this, that there were people getting these jobs without a college degree or with a totally irrelevant college degree as long as they had the skills. So one thing sort of led to another, and then that's when I began teaching myself. And and the rest is sort of history, but I will say I did not start the blog or the podcast right away. I was learning like on and off for about almost a year, I would say, until I then ended up starting the blog.
Yeah. And I feel like the name of your blog is so appropriate too. Learn to Code with Me, right? So it's not like you're coming from this sort of high up on a mountain position of like, I'm the expert. It's sort of like positioned as like, hey, this is what I've learned. This is what I'm learning. Come learn with me.
Yeah, and I have to say there was such little thought put into that. And now it's funny when I look back that it has stuck for this long because, and it, you know, continues to stick because I cannot tell you how little planning was put into that domain name. Like, I just thought of the name, I saw the domain name was available, and I got it. And I think like the next day, even, I published my first blog post or something on it. Like, when I made the decision to do it, it was super fast. It was super quick as far as like the execution goes. Things evolved so much since. I think we're going to talk about that a bit, you know, later, like the early days maybe versus now. But yeah, the actual, I'm going to get a WordPress site and I'm going to get it set up, took a very short amount of time.
I love that though. I think that's the way it has to be in order to just be executing and focusing on what actually matters, right? Which is the content and bringing in readers and getting to know the readers. So what was the first post you published? Do you remember?
Oh my goodness. I could probably go back and check. There are some older pieces of content that I either like unpublished or kind of like merged together into one better article because my early posts were not very good. They weren't very detailed. They weren't very thought out. Like, I didn't really know what I was. I would say I had writing skills, but I just didn't put any thought into like the audience that'd be reading the content. So it was kind of, I don't know if selfish is the right word, but it was very like all about me. And I mean, the domain is Learn to Code with Me, but then over time I realized, wait a second, if I want people to read and to value my stuff, I have to make it about like helping people or giving, you know, giving information that is going to help people in one way or another, not just writing about my experiences with no real value someone could walk away with. So I don't actually remember exactly the first post, but it was probably something like why I'm learning to code or why I'm sort of starting the blog. I think it was something like that.
I think that's, I mean, that's pretty perfect the way you described it. You know, it's something that you have to finesse and grow into over time, right? Like no one, when they first start blogging, is like this amazing, perfect writer that can also relate it to these clear takeaways every reader can take from reading an article, right? But I think what's important is that you stick with it. So, you know, speaking a little bit more to that writing practice, how often writing of your cadence in the early days?
So in the early days, I was publishing more than I am now, but the content was a lot shorter. It was a lot less valuable. I think you just said it quite well before. It was like the topics that I was writing about, yeah, weren't really well researched, weren't really well thought out, could be quite short. And now, like, the way I just approach writing is so different, especially on the Learn to Code with Me site, because we don't publish that often. We publish guest posts more often, but then our actual own content, not as often. But when we do publish something, it's like a whole thing, right? It's like from the planning to the writing, to everything. It just takes a lot more time and is very, very, very well thought out. But early on, I was publishing more. I would say it was less quality. I still do have a lot of the earlier content on the site. I didn't take it down just because I didn't, but it definitely does not get a lot of views or a lot of foot traffic right now. It's very minimal.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned, you know, the transition to the way you now produce content, it being much more well-researched, thought out, like way more in depth, which is very noticeable. And for everyone watching, listening, like seriously, go check out Lawrence's blog, because it's very like awesome case study examples and how in-depth your content can be on a topic. So, you know, speaking to that planning process nowadays, where do you get your ideas for blog posts? Is it something that you research, you check keyword volume? What does your process sort of look like?
I took a few notes here. Okay, cool. So yes. So we actually have like a few different processes. So I mentioned the guest post. Now we have a fair amount of guest post content. We actually haven't published a guest post or anything on the site for almost 2 months because I've been sort of transitioning and working on like more foundational projects, but we're about to start ramping up our publishing again. And when I say ramping up, I mean like two posts a month, nothing that often. I don't ever see us publishing that often, but for our own process, yeah, so we look at user feedback. So I have like different kinds of survey results that I sent out over time. Also, we get a lot of emails from readers that will write in about, you know, with their own questions. So we'll think about that. We'll think about what people that are already on the site or tuning into the site are asking. I'll also look at existing popular articles like on our own site, and just that's kind of more so just like how they were written, how long they are, things like that. But then also popular content on other people's sites. You could even probably say like competitor sites. I don't really like see it that way, but you know, I'll look up a certain topic that maybe I'm thinking about based on some of the user feedback, and I'll see how with the keyword research, how well these kind of terms are doing, how many people are searching them every month. The keyword competition or difficulty, like how hard it could be to rank for some of these other key terms. And then I'll look at the competitor articles for those terms. And there is probably a few other things I'll take into consideration, but that's kind of the process as far as the research and on what to write about goes.
Yeah. And I think that's honestly the best approach too. Like, first of all, like, what are people asking you all the time, right? Because that's built in to your existing audience. You know that the people you want to reach are asking about stuff, but then also, yeah, competitor research, right? Like see what's working really well. Like, what are the high volume terms that big companies or brands or big bloggers are already like trying to compete for? And then how can you edge them out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one other thing that I hopefully will start doing more of in the future is thinking about topics that maybe my existing audience isn't asking these questions, but my future audience could be. So like kind of an example, and you know, it's tech related, but let's say game development. So building games, like literally no one in my audience ever asks me about building games. And we did a survey recently, and I think one or two people maybe said, I wish you published more content about like game development. Mm. But just because, yeah, but just because not everyone on my current audience wants to hear about that, there could be potential good fits for my audience down the road that do want to learn about that. I'm just using this example. I actually don't think that's the case, but that could be an example of a topic that no one's asking about, but also because I haven't written about it yet. So there's no one really there yet who wants to learn about that because it's something I've never even touched on. So I try to keep that in mind as well too. And just if it's like a good fit for the site, which is really for beginner level people that want to transition into tech careers. So it's not just coding, it's like any kind of tech career. So that also kind of leaves some more advanced topics, you know, like off the table. Like we wouldn't get into that because we're trying to gear towards the beginner audience.
Yeah, I like that approach. I think it's smart. Kind of keeps you open to future opportunities. Like you could unlock a new cohort of an audience even.
Yeah.
So Laurence, ballpark figure, if you're up for sharing, how many visitors do you typically see to your blog on the average month these days?
Yeah, so as we talked about already, I left my full-time job. So my last full month was in July 2018, and then I took some time off and was traveling. So I really haven't been back full-time for very long. But one really interesting thing is when I went back full time, my site traffic increased so much that first full month I was back, and it's continuing to go up, not at such a drastic level. There's a lot of reasons for that. Like we were doing a lot of content updates. We're still doing a lot of content updates. Before I was back full time, I was kind of in like hibernation mode. So my traffic, my subscribers, like sure, it was kind of growing, but it was really sort of just like humming along. And now that it's my full-time focus again, things have been growing a lot faster, which, you know, makes sense because I'm now putting all of my time into it. But in any event, so my traffic in August was just over like 90,000 unique visitors, but my traffic in July, this is when this huge increase happened, was like 67 or 70,000. So it went up a ton, and it went up like 26% or something between those 2 months.
That is awesome. What you give attention to grows.
Yes, exactly. And I still was on vacation and stuff in August. It wasn't like my full thing. Now, in September, I do think it's going to grow again. And I think it'll grow every month. I don't think it's going to be as drastic, like your 26% every month, because, you know, I there's some term for that. Like when the bigger you get, right, the harder it is to like make those kind of improvements. Same, I think, goes with like revenue and other stuff. Like, and with email subscribers as well, I feel like getting from like 0 to 1,000 was really hard. But then all of a sudden, like 1,000 to 10,000 seemed like it happened right away. I don't know. Anyhow, but I don't think the numbers are going to be that insane moving forward, but maybe they will actually. Who knows? We'll have to see.
So I actually want to touch on that 0 to 1,000 thing that you just mentioned there. Do you remember, if you can remember back to when you were sort of just still getting started and finding your readers and figuring out how to bring people to your site, how did people sort of begin discovering your blog? Like what were the sources that people found your site on?
Yes. So at first, so like the first 6 months or so, I think any of my traffic would have came from social media. After that, I began getting like indexed more from Google, and then more people slowly but surely were coming in from like Google or, you know, organic search results. And today, most of my traffic, like all of it for the most part, it seems, is coming in from Google. But it takes a while to get that traction, especially when you're like, you know, you're a new blog, you're a new domain name. I feel like I know there's like tips and tricks. At the time, I had no idea what these were, and that wasn't even on my radar. So I'm sure I could have gotten like picked up sooner than 6 months or 9 months or whatever it was. But yeah, it was pretty hard at first, like seeing only, you know, 3 or 5 people coming to my site. And probably some of those were me. It was like 5
different
people.
Devices, different IP addresses.
Yeah, seriously. I was like, wow, someone was on my site for so long. Oh, wait, that was probably me. And then I remember learning I could like block my IP address, which nowadays like wouldn't even affect anything, like one IP address. But back then it definitely did when the numbers were so small. But one of the things early on, I remember that sort of that changed the traffic trajectory a bit. And I don't do this strategy anymore, but at the time, it worked really well for me was I was interviewing different people in tech and I was putting the articles on my site. This is like really, really early on. Like if you want to even find them, you have to go really far back. And it was just like a really simple Q&A. Again, it wasn't super thought out, but my strategy, like thought out as far as the content goes. Like it could have been so much better if I was trying to do that today or something. But then I would, you know, reach out to these people and then I would ask them to share it on social media. Some would more than others. I remember one of the women, she turns out she had like a huge following on LinkedIn, I think. And just from her sharing it on LinkedIn, I got like, I don't know, it was like 500 visitors in one day. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is insane. It was all from her. Just it was all to that article. But I think point is incorporating like other people into the content and then asking them to share it is a really good strategy for anyone of any size, but especially when you're first starting out, like trying to find those partnerships and even if that's just, you know, mention them in your post.
Hell yeah. I couldn't agree more. I think that's something that has worked so well for me too, is just like finding the people that already have like your existing readers too, that you want to get in front of and asking them, you know, doing favors for them essentially by highlighting their work, whether it's through an interview, you know, a written Q&A like you've done, or even just proactively featuring them, right? Like you don't have to reach out and ask for an interview in order to find something they've written online or listen to a podcast they've done in the past and like do a write-up about them, right? Like it's all about providing value.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, and having those relationships that can then be nurtured over time, because again, the first year or a bit less than that, my blog was, you know, nothing substantial at all. It's just, but then over time, it like just starts to sort of accumulate and build up and you're just, you know, start to gain credibility. And then some of those folks you reach out to, you could probably even collaborate with in another way in down the road, you know, you never know. So all for finding ways to mention people, incorporate them and then sharing it with them.
Now, you mentioned that the majority of your traffic still comes from ranking well in organic Google search. So I assume that means individual posts on your blog, right? That happen to rank well for specific keyword phrases that people search a lot?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because there's some content on my site that, again, this older content that I still have up that maybe I'll do something with one day or get, I don't know. Well, that's a decision for another day. Those pieces get like literally like zero views a month or maybe like 5 views a month. There's probably a set of like 10, 20 posts and even just like the top 5 that bring in most of the traffic.
I want to dig into that in particular because I kind of see the same distribution on my blog too, where, you know, the call it the 80-20 rule, right? Like 20% of your posts drive 80% of the traffic. So when you sort of look at those standout pieces of content, the ones that drive the majority of your readers in, you know, how long are we talking as far as like time investment to write one of those articles if you had to add it up?
Oh yeah. So let me also say that there's been articles I spent a ton of time writing that never performed that well or like maybe bring in some traffic every month, but they don't. But then there's the ones that took me a very long time to do. And I don't even know, 10, 20 hours. I mean, there's some of them that I rely heavily on other people because I'm thinking of one, it's about online coding boot camps, and I include for every boot camp mentioned a past student. And with that past student, there's like a photo, there's quotes, there's so just like the coordination, of
like
getting
outreach and interviewing.
Yeah, and getting the information from them and getting the photo and the back and forth, and then they're on vacation. So it's like it takes so much time just to like, it's not even the writing, just getting that information and then writing it. And then now we're updating things. So we'll go back and update some of these really highly visited posts. And that will take another 5, 10 or even more, maybe hours, just to go back and make everything up to date and make sure the links are working and make sure the information is accurate. And so it's definitely takes a lot of time.
I do want to highlight though, for everyone listening, watching, like this is what makes standout content, right? Like putting in the time, going that extra level that other people aren't going, you know, going out and interviewing people to past students to include testimonials about how their experience was in this coding bootcamp. Like these are the kinds of things that make your content better than other stuff out there. So it can't be, you know, understated enough, like how important this is.
Yes. And going back to, I think, something we were talking about a bit earlier with the competitor research, or really what I mean is other content that ranks for a term that you're going after. So for instance, online coding bootcamp or coding bootcamp, what I'll do is if I think it's a good topic for my audience and I think there could be a way to rank highly for it, actually a traffic for this term and whatever, I'll then go through and look at like the competitors for that term and I'll see what their content is like. Like I'll see what they talk about. I'll see how long it is. I'll see, you know, take into consideration all that. And then I'll think, okay, but what can I do to like one up that? Like, how can I make what I'm going to put out better than theirs so that, you know, if it's better, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, strategies to ranking in Google. I mean, there's like probably like hundreds, but you know, my overall like thought is, okay, like this is the existing content for this that's helping people. If I make mine better, it should rank higher unless they go back and then update theirs or something. So then I'm just going to, you know, go ahead and do that. And even if it takes more time and maybe if it even doesn't end up ranking highly, at least it's like a really quality piece of content that is better than the other stuff at the time that I wrote it.
Yeah. And it feels like it's something you can stand behind regardless.
Yeah, exactly.
So I want to shift gears a little bit now. You also have this kick-ass podcast, the Learn to Code with Me podcast, entering your fifth season soon. By time this video is available, this episode airs, the fifth season will be live. So for everyone, check out the Learn to Code with Me podcast. But Laurence, why did you decide to launch your own podcast in a world where everyone has a podcast?
Yeah, so I launched it 2 years. It was actually 2 years to the date after I started the blog, which was a really good decision not to try to do it right away. Actually, early on, I never thought I would have a podcast. I wasn't interested in podcasting. But you know, as time went on, I realized that, first of all, I love to consume podcasts myself. Second, I also realized, you know, that I'm writing all this really great content for people and people are getting value from it, but there's a lot of people that just like aren't going to read a blog post. Like they're just not going to sit down and read this like really long blog post, or maybe they'll skim it, whatever, because you know they're busy, they're commuting, they are, you know, are multitasking, and it's easier for them just to listen to this information and digest it that way. And that's exactly what I do. Like I love audiobooks, I love podcasts, so it's something that I myself, you know, do. When I want to learn something new, I look up podcasts and audiobooks on it. So. And I was like, and for existing people, it gives them another way to consume the content. It allows them to get to like know me in a different way because they could see my writing and my emails. But then when they're hearing my voice, it's like another level of connection, you know? Mm-hmm. So those were some of like the main things that ended up leading me to create the podcast. And it's grown. So this season actually is going to be a bit different from my other ones I've done in the past because I approached it differently. Before, I would find a guest and then figure out the topic of the show, or even after the interview, kind of figure out the topic of the show or something. But right before the interview, I'd figure out the topic of the show, but I'd already have the guest lined up. This time around, it's like reversed. I did a bunch of research. I surveyed my audience. I'm looking at all these different things to figure out, okay, what 20 things can I talk about that I think are going to do well just from like the existing listeners to getting new listeners and hopefully will rank well in Google too. Because right now my podcast, the way I do my show notes, don't rank well in Google because they're just not, it's kind of like a list summary. It's not like an article, right? Anyhow, so I'm approaching it really different this season, and hopefully, fingers crossed, that it's going to go really well. And when I say go well, I mean get more downloads than it has before. So yeah, we'll have to see. But yeah, I think, you know, I don't think it's for everyone because it is so much work. It's like, and it's just so different, such different work than doing writing. But I definitely think it's worth it just to connect with people and also get to interview like people on the show that I want to talk to. There's so many good, mm-hmm. There's so many benefits to it.
All right. Well, we'll be watching and listening. So we're coming to the end of our interview here. I wanted to ask you a question about monetization before I let you go. So when it comes to the distribution of, you know, your different sources of income for your blog, can you kind of like break down for us the different pieces of the pie, whether that's affiliate, sponsorships, courses, etc.?
Yeah. So the two like main branches are affiliate revenue or rev sharing, as I sometimes call it. So that's, if people aren't familiar, it's like promoting a product and earning a commission for sales for that product. And then sponsorships. And sponsorships, those could look a bit different too, depending, but it's typically like a flat rate for a thing. So that could be a blog post sponsorship. That could be the podcast sponsorships. I also do dedicated emails. So that's like sponsoring an email. For other people, I don't do this, but like social media, like Instagram, I mean, that's huge, like sponsored Instagram posts. So as far as the split goes, it can depend on the month. When we're in season of the podcast, that really helps with like the breakdown or the pie of the sponsorship revenue. And so if we're in season and then maybe we do a sponsored post that month the sponsorship revenue will be a lot greater than the affiliate revenue. But then there's other months, depending on certain promotions that we do or content that we publish, where the affiliate revenue could be a bit higher. And for the last... So actually, sorry, going into October, it's going to be, because of the podcast, like the podcast portion of the pie is probably going to be about like 50%. So it'll be like 50-50, I think. And hopefully moving forward, I'm going to have them be about like the same. And then I'll be able to branch out into another type of revenue stream. And that'll probably be some kind of product or service or something. I really haven't given it much thought yet, because there's just so much process and optimization I can do with the affiliate stuff and with the sponsorship stuff. Because in the past, when I was, you know, working full time, especially with the sponsorship things, it was all inbound. People would ask if they could sponsor a post. Yeah. And I'd be like, sure, let's do it. But there's no process to it. So now I'm just trying to get a process and system to it where it could just be repeatable and I can have other people help me execute it. So it'll free up my time and I could build something else.
What does that process look like for you? Or what do you anticipate it look like when you're sort of reaching out to potential sponsors and like starting those conversations yourself? What's your approach going to be for that?
Yeah, so we do that right now with the podcast. That's the only way, or that's the only kind of method or medium that we actively reach out to people for. So anything with email or blog, we aren't like actively approaching people. That's all inbound. But because the podcast is like 20 episodes right in a row, season, you know, boom, 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 week after week after week, and we want to fill up the spots for the podcast, so we'll be more proactive and we'll reach out to people. So what does the process look like? Oh man, so there's a lot that goes into it. We're actually trying to figure out a process right now, because I'll reach out to people, but I'm not the best at marketing. I just don't have it like sales, like stages, yeah, kind of brain. So like I go through the motions and I do an okay job, but I don't have like a process to it. So that's what we're trying to fix. But we'll find companies that we think are just aligned to like with our values and our audience. We'll also consider if they've sponsored other podcasts or blogs or just anything in the past. And then we'll try to find an email for someone there. We'll reach out to them. If they don't get back to us, you know, we'll follow up. If they do get back to us, we're kind of tweaking this right now. We'll either have them hop on a phone call with me to discuss more, or we'll send them like a media kit and like pricing information. So we'll send that over. Usually be, you know, some back and forth, and a lot can happen between those stages. But then once someone's like, yeah, we're going to do this, that part actually becomes a lot easier, because it's just like, okay, there's an agreement, there's an invoice, there's the ad spots, we put them in, boom. It's kind of like the part in the middle that for us right now, we need to, yeah, get a better process around.
All right. I like it. Well, Laurence, this is my last question for you. What would you say has been your best investment that you've ever made in the context of growing your business? So this could be in the form of time, tools, products, services, education, or otherwise.
So I'd have to say the best investment was just like hiring other people to help me. So contractors that are, you know, part-time. I have some people that work like five hours a month, and some that work more closely and often with me. I will caveat this though with saying that there has been times where I've hired people to help with things that I didn't put enough thought into, and I ended up probably just wasting money because I really didn't need their help, or it was like the wrong thing or something. But overall, like some of those situations aside, it's been like the best thing that I've done is just having other people help me and, you know, delegating things that would free up my time to do other stuff.
I like it. I would second this advice. And I would also say I've had this experience too, where like when you try and go and hire out people to help you scale processes that you haven't really figured out yourself yet, that's when I find things break.
Yeah. Or maybe it's like to help with a certain project that I didn't just put enough planning and thought into. And I'm like, wait a second, maybe this should have been done differently. And then they've already done work in another way. I haven't done that actually recently, thank goodness, but definitely earlier on, I feel like I would find myself in situations like that.
Yes. All right. Well, Laurence, thank you for joining us. Can you tell everyone listening, watching where they can go learn more about you, your blog, your podcast, and all the things that you're up to?
Yeah, of course. You can just in iTunes, just search Learn to Code or Learn to Code with me, and I should show up right away, or any podcast device you listen on. As far as my website goes, it's learntocodewith.me, and you can find me and all the blog's content there.
All right. Awesome. Thank you again for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Side Hustle Project, I would love your support. Head on over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating. And as always, you can catch every episode of the Side Hustle Project on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for tuning in.